This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Well, good morning to the Senate Democrat, or the Senate and House.
And House, thank you.
All Democrats press conference. Appreciate everybody being here and for the folks on the line as well. I think today we wanted to start out with the conversation about education. That's going to be probably the biggest discussion this session between the legislature. The governor has submitted his bills, and so I think what we wanted to do is talk about the governor's plan and also talk about our plan for education and the differences in the two, because there are some fairly stark differences when we start lining them up side by side. So one of the first differences is that we're proposing a plan that gets us to $50,000 in average teacher pay in South Dakota. The reason for that is that gets us truly competitive with our surrounding states. We applaud the efforts to get us out of the position of last in the nation, but what we really need to do is get out of position of last in our region. And the governor's plan of $48,500, we feel, does not get us far enough. I can't stress enough that we support the concept and moving towards this discussion about increasing teacher pay. But the important thing to remember is that we need, and we heard it all summer since the Blue Ribbon Task Force was put into place, and I was a member of the Blue Ribbon Task Force, so I got to hear it at every meeting, at every public meeting from South Dakotans all across the state, that we need to be bold. And we need to fix the problem now. We need to go far enough to fix the problem now. Getting us to $48,500 in average teacher pay is a good start, but it still leaves us last in our region. It still leaves us behind North Dakota, behind Nebraska, behind Iowa, behind Minnesota, behind Wyoming. We need to get in the middle. Our plan gets us there. Our plan gets us there with keeping the same student-to-teacher ratio that we have today. And I think that's a very important discussion as well. Half of our school districts in South Dakota right now have a lower than 12-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio. The small schools right now in the governor's plan are being proposed to get a 12.5 as a floor. So that's the most student-to-teacher ratio that they could get. That's very concerning when half of your school districts have less than 12-to-1. So we need to work on lowering that, and we're hopeful that the governor and our friends on the Republican side of the aisle will come to the table and have conversations about finding some common ground. It's very important that we find some common ground on this, because I know the discussion has also revolved around that student-to-teacher ratio and the idea of efficiencies. Well, here's something that I want to remind us. Don't confuse efficiency with effectiveness. I heard that from one of the superintendents the other day that were up here. Do not confuse efficiency with effectiveness, because yes, we can raise our student-to-teacher ratio and get larger classroom sizes, but is that giving us better outcomes for our students? Are our smaller schools going to be able to be competitive with their teacher pay and keeping their class sizes at a level that works for them? Because I'm sure that some small schools or even larger schools can increase their class size, but does that improve the effectiveness of the education in South Dakota? I would encourage us to have that discussion as we move forward in this session and to focus on how we can determine what the right student-to-teacher ratio is and not just pull a number out of the air. So we need to have that discussion. And with that, I will turn it over to Representative Spence Hawley, who is the minority leader in the House.
Thank you, Senator Sutton. We've talked repeatedly about the education over the last 4 or 5 years, so anything that we say is not brand new probably to you. We applaud the governor for taking us on. We think that the Blue Ribbon Task Force did a great job of outlining the problem that we've got and the teacher shortage and the low pay and the other issues, and the governor has come out with a plan, and our biggest issue is that it doesn't go far enough. We've said that. And our key is instead of $48,500 average pay, we need to shoot for $50,000, and we need to keep the same teacher ratio we're using right now so the teachers would stay the same as we've got right now. The difference between ours and the governor says that it needs about $80 million to do it. We say we need $122 million to do it, and that's the primary difference. His proposal was a 0.5% sales tax. Our proposal is a penny sales tax, which has been filed on the Senate side, with the exemption on food. As we know, the big issue on sales tax is the regressivity of it. It's the toughest on the lower income people of any tax that we can be offering. And that's the reason for the removal of food. There's four states in the nation that don't have sales tax. Of everybody else, there's only four states that allow taxation of food. None of our surrounding states in the Midwest tax food right now. On an average, if you take a family of four, it can mean a savings. You know, they're spending $400 a month probably for the groceries, for food. And if you take the tax off of that, that gives them 3 extra weeks of food a year. Now, it may not seem like a big deal for a lot of us, but if you're a family and you're trying to figure out at the end of the month, how do I buy food for the kids? Are they eating mac and cheese? Or are they going to eat hamburger today? Or what is it going to be the option? It's a big deal. The $40 million in property tax refund that the governor's talked about doesn't really help anybody. You know, we had a $1.3 billion property tax collection in state total. If you take the $40 million, that ends up in that 2% range. 2% doesn't have much of an impact for many people. But the 3 weeks of groceries for some people has a huge impact. The other offsetting point in that is on those people that are getting that food tax that means something, most of them don't own property. They aren't going to see any of this tax refund come back. The people that are going to see it are the people that it doesn't have the impact for. So that's the proposal. Again, that's that. We hope we can get that to go through. The half penny is going to be tough, and the penny is going to be tougher yet. But and we don't know where it's going to end up yet. As you saw, the governor's half-cent tax was introduced into the House side. It's been assigned to the Joint Appropriations. And I'm sure that'll be the first discussion we'll have before we actually get into the governor's side of it. As far as, and I'll let Billy go on it, but as far as the other two bills that the governor's introduced with the actual change of the formula and going to the teacher formula, teacher per student ratio as compared to the per student allocation, we don't have a problem with most all of that. And there are a lot of good factors in there, the capping of reserves that they're carrying. We have no problem with that. The getting the capital outlay and capping it at their current max with 3 mills, and then they can use the COLA going forward or new growth. We have no problem with that. We have no problem for using other funds from the capital outlay for expenses, the 45% that they can take of their capital outlay to use for any funds, transfer general fund. We have no problem with that. So most of the plan, we're on board. We're just saying, and we've said this repeatedly, if we're going to have this discussion now, we aren't going to do it again for 10 years probably. So fix it correctly now, and then we can move on and not have this discussion next year and next year and next year again.
And I would just add that there is a little bit of concern. You know, I've heard concerns from members of the House that are worried about the accountability piece to make sure that the money gets in the teachers' hands. And I think that's an important discussion to have. But I think the accountability is going to be in place for several reasons. I think, number one, that the legislature is going to be monitoring it over the next several years to make sure that we're reaching our target goals. Number two, we're putting reserve caps back on, so schools aren't going to be able to squirrel money away as some people fear. And you know, really, that's an important discussion as well, because there are a handful of schools that have reserves that are too high. I mean, we're willing to admit that, but the statewide average is 27% in your general fund reserves, and that's not excessive by any means, in our opinion. So we're okay with putting the caps on there, and that's going to be another measure of accountability that about 80 to 85% of a school's general fund goes to teacher pay right now. We don't see that as a big problem, and if anything, the accountability is going to be in place for those reasons and the reason of the market as far as the competitiveness of your school with surrounding schools. If other schools are giving their teachers $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 raises, you're going to have to get competitive with those surrounding schools. So I think the accountability is built in, which is why there's a little bit of concern initially here with the governor's plan that they're wanting to mandate 90% of these dollars go directly to teacher pay right out of the gates. And that's a little bit concerning, in my opinion. We want to try to give as much local control here as possible, and we feel that the accountability measures are built in. So with that, I think we'll close with, well, I'll let Spence make a comment, and then I'll make a closing statement as well.
I'm sitting here thinking, you know, one of the problems we get into in our discussion here is we're in the weeds all the time, and we're talking dollars and figures and all that. Sometimes we need to pull back, and what is the true purpose of this? And the ultimate purpose of this discussion is the education of our kids, the K-12. The K-12 system in the United States has problems right now. You know, we're about in the average of civilized nations on the education of our kids. We don't perform well in the global market. And in South Dakota, we're staying average on our gains of our students. We don't see any that they're gaining dramatically against other states in our quality of education, maybe slipping a little bit. But we need to think, what is the real problem here? And the real problem is we need to have our students, our kids, prepared for the market when they leave, either go to college or to get into the workforce. And they not only need to compete in Brookings, South Dakota, and Selby, Rapid City, they need to complete not only nationally, they need to compete globally. Brookings and Daktronics has businesses overseas in Ireland. They've got businesses in Germany. And our kids from South Dakota State and Brookings High School are ending up in Ireland. They're ending up in Germany. And that's where you got to compete. So that is our focus. And one of the issues is you got to have good teachers, and you got to have enough teachers to do that. And so we focus our discussion on that, but ultimately the kids is it. And I think that is the most important thing to keep out of this whole discussion, is what is the end result that we want to have happen for our education system in South Dakota, and what's the best way to get there.
Yeah, and I would just add, and I would submit to you that in order to have the best success rate for our students, we need to ensure that we have the best teachers. So I think it comes down to that South Dakota teachers deserve our respect. Every day, they inspire students to set big goals and then empower them with the skill set to accomplish those goals. I think every one of us can point to a teacher who made a substantial impact in our lives. Investing in teachers is important because at some point, we've all had a teacher invest in us. Though this process has opened teachers up to scrutiny, as the Blue Ribbon Task Force recommendations found, South Dakota already does have high-quality teachers, and their work is critical to student success. So respect requires action, and it's time our actions match the commitments our teachers deserve. So with that, we would open up for questions and comments.
So you talked about raising the sales tax a penny, not having that on food, keeping the current student-teacher ratio. Are there any other specifics that are different in your plan than the governor's plan?
Well, I would say the one thing that ended up as part of the governor's plan was we had proposed originally to leave the capital outlay flexibility at 45% and to then open that up for any general fund expense, which the governor used in his plan. But we also had one piece that I think is really unique that we should really be having more discussions about, and that's our proposal to offer some incentive funding for career and technical education. And it would kind of be part of that shared services portion of what the governor's plan was talking about, but ours is going to be more of a focus on how schools, especially small schools, can collaborate and work together to offer more career and technical education courses. And let me give you an example of what that looks like. In our town of Burke, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, they submitted a proposal that the governor was giving money out of the future fund for CTE type needs. And Burke partnered with 3 other schools around us to offer 4 CTE courses in partnership. So each school gets a mobile unit, and they rotate that mobile unit once each year. And so every kid in high school gets a chance at those 4 CTE courses at some time in their lifespan. Now, schools wouldn't be able to do that without the money that was provided through the Future Fund. So I think our plan was proposing around $4 million in incentives each year to go towards those types of shared services and collaboration. So that's one way that our plan is different and kind of an added piece of that.
Yeah, and I guess to answer your question directly, we don't have a lot of other differences. Most of the plan we're comfortable with, as we've set up here. There's a couple things that we would like to tweak as it goes through, and that's why we did not put in a specific another formula as a bill from the Democrats, because we don't have the problem. The biggest question is the funding, and that's the question that's going to be answered up front on both sides, and we hope to expand the discussion into a broader discussion, and we need to talk about funding it adequately, easy for me to say. But we need to do that up front. And that's probably our biggest difference right now, that and the ratio of what we're doing for small schools. So that's what we focused on every time we visit about it, and that's why.
So there's not like a specific, counterpart to the governor's bill that you guys are working on as a party?
No.
Well, the caveat is that we're adjusting the student-to-teacher ratio and the target salary. I mean, those are the two biggest pieces of the plan, and those are the two places where we have probably the most difference. And then what that creates is an added cost. I mean, that's how you end up having to come up with $120 million instead of the $80 million, because when you raise that target of $50,000 instead of $48,500, and you lower, I mean, our target small school ratio is 11.3, compared to the governor's of 12.5. Makes a big difference when you start putting the numbers into the formula.
And when you start talking numbers, we didn't say that, but the one penny brings you about $210 million a year. You need $122 million, so there's left over. That's the $90 million, if you take it off of food, off all of the pennies, it costs $90 million to do that. So that's how the numbers all add up together on the difference going to the one penny.
Is it going to be difficult to try to raise the taxes in an election year?
I know that discussion always comes up, but I would hope not. I would hope that we as legislators aren't basing our decisions on if we can get elected or not. I think that sets a really bad precedent, because if you take that stance, then every other year in South Dakota, we don't get anything done. And that is not good government. We got to be able to make difficult decisions and the right decisions now, regardless of whether you're going to get elected. I would submit that if we don't do anything for teacher pay this year, and if we don't do anything for education, and if we don't raise a tax to do it, then I would hope that the public would look at those folks that didn't support it, and they would be the ones that are in trouble in the next election.
You know, along with that discussion, Billy's 100% correct, And when you say, well, we're overtaxed already and people don't want it, South Dakota, we talk about teacher pay, South Dakota and our general revenue is the lowest in the nation. We're last in the nation on what we take in for revenue in the state by about $1 billion to the next closest state. So we are running our state extremely effective on the income we're taking in right now, the revenue. And I don't think there's a lot of waste and excess in our state government right now. I really don't. The true story is that we as a South Dakota need to make a decision. what is important and what are our values in South Dakota, and if our education system and our children are of value to us, we need to step up to the plate. And I don't think it's a discussion of well, should we have a tax or not or whatever. We need to make that decision first. And if your decision is our children are important, and that is one of our basic core values in South Dakota, then we need to step up to the plate. And when I talk to people, people agree. I mean, I don't find this, what, don't raise taxes. I don't get that. I get more people say, I hate to raise taxes. I hate to pay more sales tax. But it's important that we fix our education system now. And that's the answer I hear until I come up here. And then it's, well, no new tax discussion. And we need to get past that. And we need to focus on what is your core value.
Well, and also remember, we've done polling. The governor's office has done polling. Those polls are out there that show that overwhelmingly people support more money for education, and they support more money for teacher pay. Overwhelmingly. It's not even close. But like Spence said, until you get here to the Capitol, and we've seen some grandstanding already, that is not good for the conversation.
You know, I'm just going to add a quick comment. There's a couple other proposals out there. There's a proposal to take the video lottery money. The video lottery money is already used in our general revenue. It does not create any new income at all, despite what discussion is. And so that just doesn't make sense to go there. It doesn't solve a problem. Another proposal is, well, we don't need to change a formula. We had a terrible 0.3% suggested by the governor in his budget, and we should need to go to 2.7%. Well, 2.7% fix on our current budget doesn't fix the problem. So what they've thrown out as alternatives aren't even viable to solve the problem. It's just going to be another big can we kick down the road again further. So we've come up to the moment to make the decision. We're at the Y in the road. Do we want to solve it or do we want to kick it? What do you want to do? And that's where we're hoping we solve it this year.
No one else has any questions. Switching gears just for a moment, how are things coming with the Medicaid expansion discussion? Any changes, updates with that? Where are things standing in your party?
As far as our party, I mean, we're in kind of a wait-and-see mode to hear back from CMS and that discussion of if they're going to approve the proposed plan. We're 100% on board of getting it done. It's just going to be a matter of what they approve. I think we're going to have another call next week with the coalition group to maybe get an update on where we stand on that. We should be hearing very shortly. The feds are very aware that we are in a pretty serious time crunch here and that we need a decision pretty quickly in order to move this forward.
You will probably be able to get a better answer at 11 o'clock when you visit with the governor, when I visit with the staff yesterday. Today we were supposed to have heard something by the end of this week from CMS on where we're headed with the IHS reimbursement and what they're doing with it. And they hadn't heard anything yesterday, and they were going to call them again today. So that is the holdup. As we all know, there's a timeline here with our 38 days in session. And to get it in, we need to get something quick. And they understand that, and the governor's office is pushing really hard. And when we had the representatives out from Washington here, that had been emphasized several times to them on our timeline crunch, and they understand that. So we're hopeful it's on track still. From our side, it's all systems go. So
Democrats 100% on board?
Yes.
No problem. Do you think you'll have enough votes from the other side?
I would hope so. I mean, the arguments against it, in my opinion, are not legitimate anymore if the feds approve this change. We literally would save $70 million that would then be available to expand Medicaid. And that's how this discussion began, was we said we think we can expand Medicaid if this change happens. And, you know, Medicaid expansion isn't even going to cost the full amount, anywhere close to the full amount of that $70 million we save. And, frankly, We've said it before and we'll say it again. We're paying for these folks already. The folks that, are below 100% of poverty, we're paying for them. It's just the wrong time, the wrong place, and the wrong cost in the emergency room.
Yeah, is it going to pass? Who knows, huh? And you're asking the wrong people at this moment in time. We're behind it on both caucuses. And I can't tell you what's happening across the aisle totally. There's issues over there, and I hope that they get them fixed when this comes up for a vote, because this is extremely important to the people of South Dakota.
And it, as we talked about last year, it's extremely important for our Native American population, because not only will there be changes to IHS as far as the services that will be offered in partnership with some of our providers, but 30% of the Medicaid expansion population is Native American. And they would then be also eligible for the 100% reimbursement through the change in the IHS funding, or through the Medicaid 100% match from the feds. So it's a big impact to a large population in our state. I think Senator Troy Hinert said it best the other day when he said that you have an opportunity with one vote to affect 80,000 people in a positive way, which is our Native American population, and you will not take an any more important vote than that.
Any other questions at all?
Anybody online? If not, thank you. We always enjoy doing this, and we look forward to next week as well. And feel free to reach out to us at any time if you guys have further questions or want clarity on anything. We're always available, and our door is always open. So thank you.
Have a great weekend.